Master, because you play for the Modern Legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and I am here with the Risen One himself, Michael Mattson. How are you?
You know, Billy, I'm excited. How are you?
I'm feeling pretty good. I wouldn't say excited, though. Why are you excited?
Well, so some people might think that I'm excited to be back on the podcast.
And you know what? I assume so.
They'd be wrong. Why I'm actually excited is tomorrow is the 19th, which is my favorite day of the month. It used to be the 20th, but now it's the 19th, because that's the day that I get to read new comics. And in addition to that, because like that's when new Shonen Jump drops. And then in addition to that, the more exciting part, tomorrow, a.k.a. today, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, the Power Rangers special, the 30th anniversary, releases. Can we get a round of applause?
Yeah. You're a big Power Rangers, I don't want to say fanboy, but like I know you've always liked the Power Rangers, I think a lot more than our peers have.
Yeah, it was a very important part of my childhood. You know, it still relates to what I do today, right? There was five colors of Power Rangers, there's five colors in Magic. It's perfect analog. Also, their comic series is actually absurdly good, which sounds ridiculous because I'm a grown man talking about a comic based off of a children's show. But, like, I promise, it's very good.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, like, the I don't know if it's the lore necessarily, but I mean, there's a lot of iterations of it. They have a lot of source material to build off of. I wouldn't be surprised for it to be, like, actually pretty legit when you start digging into it.
I mean, it's all based off of Mighty Morphin, right? And if they ever... Well, they have just started incorporating elements from Zio, but it's like, I mean, it's aimed at adults. It's like not aimed at kids. And so like they really flesh it out and like, you know, they add some of the teen drama and like they can actually, you know, refer to people dying and stuff. And like they give Zordon like the super cool backstory and they turn Lord Zed is like, we don't use explicit language on the show. But he is the biggest bad butt of all time.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
A word that I will never use again.
Yeah. Bad butt. I'm gonna put that in my day to day life now. Just be like, you know, you're being a really real bad butt, and people are like, what? But it'll catch people off guard, so I think that's good. So, I'm glad you've got some things to look forward to. You know, I know some people are looking forward to 420, but Mapson's looking forward to 419. So yeah. That's good.
I'm also actually looking forward to trying out cards from the new set. I feel like, All Will Be One came out, and generally I'm, like, worn down from all the sets constantly coming out. But since I basically have not played Modern or Legacy in what feels like forever, I'm excited to actually, like, have new cards to try in those formats.
I hate to be that guy, but is March of the Machine just came out, right? Not All Will Be One. Didn't that just come out?
That's what I meant. Yeah. Like, but like since All Will Be One has come out, which was a while ago, I have not played the formats. Two sets of new cards to explore, and it's been a while since I've explored new cards. Right, like technically I was playing with All Will Be One cards, but it was all in Standard, so like the whole thing was completely different. Anyways, so now it's
way different context.
Yeah.
Yeah, there definitely are some cards I've been looking at I don't think we talked about this on the show a little. I think I might have talked about this a little bit last week, but when Robert Wilson was on. But I've got a couple of decks that I was like playing around with and having fun with. But there's a lot of interesting cards from the set some have been showing up. From March, I've definitely seen some people playing some decks. Todd Anderson, I think, is streaming. I think as we speak. Playing some Rona Brew. There's a lot of interesting cards in the set and a lot of things I'm interested in exploring down the line. I'm not sure if any have really stood out to you as things you want to try in either Modern or Legacy, though.
So, the Rona Brew he's playing is Pioneer, which I will be looking at because, I do have to get ready for Dallas, and I have been playing some Pioneer, but I can... You know, it's still early enough that I can play, like, the good formats, too.
But
I don't know that anything has, like, caught my eye for Modern or Legacy. I know I've seen some people excited about Runa in Modern. Mason Clark posted like this really funky Goryeo's Vengeance deck with it, and I will probably try it because it looks really cool. I don't know if it looks good. It's also playing like the red green battle, so definitely excited to do that. Like, I'm excited to play what is it, Fairy Mastermind? I'm excited to try that out in Legacy. You know, get a nice tempo deck going. I think I could see that card getting played in Modern.
Yeah, the Mastermind, for those who don't remember, is the it's a 2/1 for one generic and a blue Fairy Rogue with Flash and Flying. And whenever an opponent draws their second card each turn, you draw a card. And then you can pay 3 and a blue, so each player draws a card. Which, I mean, is kind of cute. I mean, like, you know, you can activate the ability at the end of turn on your opponent's turn. They have drawn their second card at least. You know, they're draw step in this one. So then you get to draw another card. So, like, it really is like, what's that, the original Jace Bellerin Planeswalker, where you're like, well, you get to draw one, and then I'll draw two. And it's like, you know, definitely breaks parity the more you do it.
Yeah, so I'm interested in playing with that card. I don't know what else there is. Like, I know, I can't think of the name of the card. There's, like, cost one and a blue. It's, like, counter target spell that costs two or less, or like a red or green spell that costs six or less.
Change the equation. That's a really interesting one.
Okay, so I've seen that card in Modern sideboards, so like I might try that out. It's hard to say I'm excited to play with like kind of another just boring one blue answer for a Primeval Titan, but
yeah, it definitely is. It's definitely one of those cards that like they have a target in mind, which I appreciate, but it is nice to have a kind of a more flexible Flash Freeze, right? Because I think that was one of the cards I actually liked at one point in the Modern format, just because, you know, you could counter a Tarmogoyf earlier, you could counter a Splinter Twin or a Siege Rhino. This is obviously dating how long ago I was considering playing Flash Freeze, and I, you know, never really got it off the ground current day, because there's not a lot of stuff I really want to worry about, but the fact that you do get to counter most relevant red and green spells in the format, and also you can just counter any target spell with converted mana cost two or less, means, like, this is still something that, you know, can actually counter, like, a Living End or something like that if that comes up, instead of just being stuck to countering those red and green spells. So definitely a little more interested in that one.
I feel like Living End was a weird weird choice to use there, because this card's never coming in versus Living End. But
well, no, I'm saying if it's in your main deck already, like potentially or something like that. I know, we're doing gross things here. But I'm just saying, like, the idea of having Flash Freeze in your deck was just, like, such a liability, because, like, you really want them to be playing all red or all green or, like, some combination of the two, but, like, there's no other utility for it. Like, theoretically, versus Living End, you could use this to you know, counter that. I'm trying to think of, like, another deck. I mean, like, Rhinos, I guess, would be the big one, but, like, that actually is a green spell. Like, Crashing Footfalls is a green spell anyway, so it would counter because it's six or less. I'm trying to think of
something. But it also counters, like, Petty Theft.
Sure. Counters Petty Theft. That's a good one. Yeah. So, yeah. In that, or, yeah, I guess the Fire and Ice, too. Like, there's a lot of things you get from playing Change the Equation. Look at you contributing. This is nice.
And you know what? Usually you're the transition guy, but while we're talking about Rhinos, let's talk about the dominance of Rhinos in Modern.
Yeah, that's a... Man, look at you with a segue.
I know. I am, you know, I'm gone for 2 weeks and I'm back. I'm on fire. I can't let XJ and Robert Wilson come up in here and, like, steal my spot, you know?
I know. They were, honestly, they were both fantastic. I heard a lot of good feedback from those 2 weeks, so, you know, shout out to both of those two for coming on. Really appreciate them coming up, but obviously I'm happy to have you back, because these segues are hard. Let's talk about Rhinos. Like, this deck has, obviously, I think, been a major player for the better part since Mono Horizons 2 came out, but we are really starting to see a lot of really top finishes coming out, you know, whether we're talking about the Modern Challenges, or I think especially after Nathan Stewart making top 8 of the SCG Con
event. Winning.
That, winning. Oh, my bad, my bad. Yeah, I think the deck really... It's gotten to the point where people were like, okay, this is the deck I have to play and I have to respect a lot more than they were before. And I think the deck's really kind of in that, like, final form at this point.
Yeah, so I think this is a deck that people already should have had on their radar. I feel like every time we bring up Rhinos, like, I just say it's, like, consistently underrated. And now, like, we're probably going to be at a point where it's appropriately rated. Like, not only did Nathan win this event, but we just had, right before I left, there was that NRG that we said, what, there's three copies of it in the top eight, including it winning, and Oliver Tomiko was talking about how broken it was. And then this past weekend, you know, there's the three challenges now, but two of them were won by Isaac Bullwinkle on Rhinos. So just a lot of domination by that deck. And granted, you know, these names that we're saying, they're also just very good players. So it's possible, you know, they're just winning because it's them. But I do think deck choice has a lot to do with it as well. And, you know, you see good players gravitate towards good decks. And there's also, now this sounds mean, but a lot of lesser-known players also putting up very prominent results with the deck.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the deck, as far as the modern format is concerned, I think there's a lot of things you can do, a lot of diverse strategies you can implement, but I do think the format ends up kind of coming down to, like, do you have a good, reliable plan versus the blue decks? I just think that is kind of where a lot of people need to be. And, like, obviously, there are other decks, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm some weird blue apologist. I am, but I do want to make sure that people understand that, like, there are other decks you could be playing, but I think the idea that Team of Rhinos just has an edge in a lot of the blue, you know, mirrors, by being a flash deck, not having to commit a bunch of resources on their main phase. Obviously, you do have, you know, Shardless Agent still, but, like, just being able to cast your marquee spell off of a Violent Outburst is huge. The fact you can actually hold up mana because you are, you know, suspending that Crushing Footfalls on one, so when it actually comes off suspend, you can actually have some counterplay up. And the fact you actually have Mystical Dispute as a main deck spell, as a four of, in Nathan's list at least, it just is such a huge edge, especially in those game ones versus something like Blue-Red Murktide, where they're, you know, trying to get down this card, or, you know, versus something like Indomitable Creativity, where they're trying to jam in a Prismari Command or a Teferi or something like that. The fact you just have a one-mana counterspell is huge.
Yeah. Mystical Dispute's really, really good. So I think a big change that this deck has made has been the addition of Murktide Regent. Have you played against the Murktide Regent builds?
I have. It is the fact you have to diversify what your plan of attack is makes it really interesting. You know, coming off of being a prominent Shadow player, right? I love playing these Grixis Shadow deck in Modern. It's really nice to have Drownlock, because Drownlock is always going to be able to counter that Crashing Footfalls. I know reliably that's going to happen. To see Murktide Regent just come into play, and I'm like, okay, well, you had five cards in your graveyard, now you have zero. I can't counter this Murktide, I can't kill this Murktide, and suddenly, because you have no cards in your graveyard anymore, now, like, a lot of your cards that I had spent a lot of time, you know, trading back and forth with, now I can't counter that Fury, I can't counter that, you know, Dead Gone or whatever, Fire Ice. Like, it creates a lot of problems, and it's a hard axis to attack, because, like, I'm not really interested in bringing in resources to attack the graveyard. I really want to have my Engineer Explosives, but it doesn't do anything versus Murktide Regent being a 7-drop. I'm not going to be able to get my Sunburst that high, so it presents just a lot of problems without being a very large package in the deck, and I think that was one of the huge issues with, you know, some other things. Like, I think I see it in some builds still, but, like, Bonecrusher Giant, I really like Bonecrusher Giant in general, but, like, it felt like it took up a lot of room somehow, I think Murktide Regent is a very elegant threat that is able to kind of dominate the game while also allowing you to still play that kind of like counter cap strategy.
Yeah, I think another one of the things about Murktide Regent is the way, I mean, this kind of goes along with what you said to an extent, but a lot of people, I think, board out some of their removal versus rhinos, just because it feels really bad when your opponent, you know, they play one spell and they get two dudes, and then you're like, I'll Prismatic Ending, and I'll Prismatic Ending the second one, so now it's like, I've spent two cards to deal with your one. I think a lot of players try to switch to things that can kind of cleanly answer all the rhinos at once. And, you know, that could be a variety of things, right? It could be Ratchet Bomb, it could be Karn Silex, not that anyone's playing that. It could be the other Ratchet Bomb that I can't think of the name of. Filigree Silex? Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's right.
It could be Chalice of the Void, if I didn't say that already. Engineered Explosives. And these cards just don't deal with Murktide Regent. So, like, if people are boarding out, like, they're one-for-one removal, and then you just go, here's this big thing, and they're just not prepared to answer it, like, it's very punishing. Like, I played the Murktide Regent a while back, and I felt like it could be hard to cast, but when it comes down, it just ends the game.
Yeah, and I think the deck in general does a good job of closing the door, you know, very quickly. But, you know, there are situations where the ground gets clogged up, and having a flyer kind of go over the top and win those kind of games, or even prevent you from dying in those kind of games, that's, you know, playing. I've actually went through a league with Blue-Red Murktide yesterday, and, you know, the number of games where I'm just like, well, I'm just going to have this 3-3 attack you in the air for three turns, and suddenly you're dead. Gets brickwalled very quickly, where it's like, well, here's a 7-7 in the air. Can you get through that? Nope. All right, well, that sucks. Like, that is kind of like the nice thing. It kind of closes a lot of the doors that people want to get through to attack you, because once again, the ground is going to be clogged up. Like, even if you don't have the ability to get through, you know, the rhinos, like, you still have to, like, wade through the fires, the dead gons. Like, it's very easy for your small creatures to get beat up on the ground. It's very easy for your larger creatures to get double blocked or something like that by rhinos. The air is kind of like the safest way to attack, and if that's being blocked by a Murktide Regent, then that's even less of an option.
Yeah. Another thing that kind of goes along with this is, this could be in my imagination, but I feel like I haven't seen as many Solitude decks lately. And Solitude was one of the answers for Murktide Regent that just, like, always felt okay, you know? Because a lot of times you end up with a creature afterwards, or, you know, sometimes you don't, but, like, it's just a good card to have in your deck, and, you know, decks playing less answers for it, as we've already said, is bad.
Yeah, I think that's one of those, like, unintentional consequences of us losing Urien. Like, Urien, at least, was always a blue card, or a blue-white card that you could pitch to your Solitude if you need to. And I think, watching people playing in Legacy, that was one of the big things. I think I kind of assumed that Urien was going to the hand because they wanted to pitch it to a Solitude. Like, that was just what it was a lot of times, you know, if they weren't going to immediately try to murder you with it. So, I think because of that, I mean, like, I'm just looking through Goldfish with the top list here. Like, there eventually is the Omnath deck, but, like, that's really the only deck that is playing it. I'm looking, yeah, I mean, no one else is really interested in playing Solitude. So I just think you lose so much steam by doing that, unless you have some kind of synergy that you're interested in. You know, maybe like a Risen Reef strategy, or, you know, some kind of, you know, dedicated elemental strategy. Like, I just don't see a lot of people playing the card anymore, and that definitely has hurt. I guess it's helped, really, Murktide Regent in Modern.
Yeah. You know, I played with Solitude last night. Card is still good, if you were wondering.
Oh yeah, I get beaten up with that card on the regular. It is definitely a very powerful card. It's doing a lot of good things. It's just, I think people aren't interested in trying to play it the way that they kind of need to without having a high count of white cards. Like, you know, this four color, I'm looking at a list from the 20K RCQ from SCGCon Richmond by Jesse Clevelander. The list is playing a decent amount of white cards. There's four Omnaths, there's four Teferis. You do have Kyra as a companion. Actually, main deck Hollowed Moonlight's interesting too, but there's a lot of things going on there that you have those white cards that maybe this isn't a matchup where you actually want a Hollowed Moonlight. Maybe this is, you've already got a Teferi going, so you don't need a second one. Or maybe, you know, you're in a desperate need, you can just get Kyra from the companion zone. Like, there's enough things going on there where that seems worthwhile. But if I'm not playing something like a Ephemerate, right, I'm really a lot less interested in trying to force Solitude into my list.
Dude, Hollowed Moonlight is an aggressive statement. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a great card in the metagame, right? Like, it's very good against Rakdos Scam, and it's very good against Rhinos, and it's very good against Creativity. So I do think it's one of the best sideboard cards you can have right now. But if you're on, like, the four-color decks, I think you're kind of a favorite against Rhinos and Scam anyways. I do think you could use the help against Creativity, but, like, I don't know that I'm main decking it. I could be off base there.
I mean, maybe, but like, I don't know by how much. I mean, like, it just seems, I don't know. It seems aggressive. I also feel like, and I could be wrong too, but like, are you interested in playing Containment Priest instead of Hollowed Moonlight?
I don't think so. I think there's definitely good arguments for both. Right, like, especially if you're already on an Elodon Recall deck, I think that playing one Containment Priest is kind of free. But when you're on the deck where people are just, like, going up on removal against you anyways, having your answer for their strategy be a removal spell seems, like, not ideal. Especially because, like, Rhinos is a lot of removal and, like, Scam is a lot of removal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and just for people at home, I understand that if you play Containment Priest, you cannot play Kahira. I'm just saying as an alternative.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I think that may be the actual big loss there, like not being able to have that companion. But I don't know. I still like the idea of having the creature. But you're probably right. That makes a lot of sense. Not turning on your opponent's removal, like, the spell is probably a little safer, and even if it's not an effect that they have to, that is not long-lasting, right, I do think it's going to be more impactful, because, like you said, it just doesn't get eaten by random removal spells, so, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the real downside to both cards is that you can't play Karuga.
Oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm really upset about.
Look, man, Respect the Cat has been on a tear with Karuga.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I played yesterday. And you know what? I got dunked on by Tron round one, but my other two rounds were delightful.
Okay, so I know we were talking about, like, respectable decks here, but you said Karuga, and now my mind's going. Did I get to talk to you about my Cissé deck that I was playing in Modern?
I have seen you post about it, and I try to ignore it.
Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. Okay, I'm gonna... I know you've seen enough of this, but I'm gonna put this in the chat, and I'll post this in our show notes too, so people can check it out if they're interested. I had so much fun playing this deck. Oh, this is a different deck. Oh, I'm looking at my CEDH list that I got from Pun City 2. So, for background information, we were at Fun City, obviously, and one of the decks that Mapson played against that ended up making the top four of the event was a Cissé Weatherlight Captain deck, which I honestly was like, oh, that's such a cool card. I wonder if there's a list for that. There obviously isn't, but the thing that I'm surprised about is that, like, it's actually in modern. I just didn't realize it. It never really clicked. I assumed that it was in some format, obviously, like, but I did not realize it was actually modern legal. So I ended up taking that card. And for those who don't know that one, Cissei Weatherlight Captain is 2 generic and a white for a 2/2 human soldier. Cissei gets +1/+1 for each color among other legendary permanents you control. You can pay 1 of each color to search your library for a legendary permanent card with converted mana cost less than Cissei's power. Put that card into the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So, you get to just search for a bunch of, like, silly stuff. The deck has been a lot of fun to actually play. I'm just, oh my gosh. Okay, so, you can obviously do a lot of interesting things, I think, with Cissei, just getting out an Omnath, or maybe you want to just, you know, get some Teferi or something like that into play. The combo is, because there's always a combo, if you have Cissei, and you have, we'll start with Bloom Tender, because that's usually what happens here. Bloom Tender, right, you can, the more colors you have for Bloom Tender, ideally that will allow you to start kind of comboing off with Cissei. You play a lot of, like, smaller legends, you know, like things like Red and Six, because it's Legendary Planeswalker. You also do play things like Oath of Nissa, you have Oath of Kaya, right? So you have some other things here, too. What ends up happening is that something like Red and Six will give your Cissei 2 counters, or, you know, 2+1/+1. So it'll be a 4/4, so you can search for something that's a 3-drop or less. So you can go from Cissei to something like Tyvar. And Tyvar will allow you to untap your Bloom Tender, but also it increases your Cissei by 1. And assuming you have all the colors, because at this point you would have red, green, white, and black, so at this point you'd be missing blue, you could go back in, if you have enough extra blue, you could pay that into Bloom Tender, you could search again with Cissei, and then maybe this time you want to get something like Kiora Behemoth Beckoner. That's the one where if a creature with power 4 or greater comes into play, you draw a card, but also untaps a permanent. So at that point, that actually allows you to have all 5 colors. So now your Cissei can go get anything that has a converted mana cost of 6 or less, and you get to untap your creature again. So then you get to untap that, you get Gigantha. Gigantha will draw your card from the Kiora. That also has that, you know, kind of haste from Tyvar, so now you get to tap that for 5 mana, you get to search again, you can go get something like Nicol Bolas Dragon God, and then since that has the abilities of all the planeswalkers you control, you can use that, you can plus that to get Tyvar again, you can go get Teferi who slows the sunset, and now you can untap your Bloom Tender, and you can untap a land as well. And if you made a copy with the Heliri, since that's an artifact, you could actually, you know, make a copy of your Bloom Tender, use that to actually generate mana as well, because now you're tapping for 10, you get 2 activations, and while you're getting 2 activations, you can go ahead and get the Chain Veil, and then you can just, you know, take infinite activations with between your Teferi who slows the sunset and Chain Veil, and you can just win the game from there. And it sounds like a crazy pipe dream, but I've done it a lot. So the deck is obviously a work in progress, but it's been a lot of fun to play. And I haven't gotten a 4-1 yet. I haven't gotten a 5-0, but I've gotten like plenty of 3-2s, a lot of 2-3s, just trying to figure out the numbers and things like that. And the deck has been a blast and a really interesting kind of thought experiment. You do not seem impressed with this list.
Nope. It actually does seem very much like something I would play.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, this seems like it's going to be complicated. And then I kind of zoned.
So it definitely feels like it should be complicated, but when you start actually going through the deck, it becomes kind of obvious. You just want to keep doing stuff. The big thing I think that people miss is that Saheeli is very good in the deck, just because it does allow you to go up on mana by making an artifact creature that you can then untap with, you know, the Teferi who solicits the Sunset. But, I mean, the deck overall has been very, I don't want to say very interesting, but intriguing. Because there's a lot of things that I didn't think that would be worthwhile that have been really, really powerful, you know, bit by bit. Things like, once again, Bloom Tender being really good. I was playing Fae Burrow Elder, you know, standard all-star. One generic, a green and a white for a 0/0 with vigilance, but it gets +1/+1 for each color among permanents you control. And you can tap it to add one mana for each color, for each permanent you control, each color. So at the very least, it taps for two, but a lot of times it ends up tapping for, you know, three or four. I have been lucky enough to have that along with something like a Tyvar or like a Saheeli Rai, and suddenly you're just like making tons and tons of mana, which is really nice. It is a very interesting thought experiment to try to piece together, and I've been sharing screenshots on Twitter trying to bait some people into trying to play it as well, but yeah, definitely lots of things to work on still.
No one's fallen for it.
No one's fallen for it. No, I'm kind of hurt. I mean, I thought my one of mana base would be appealing. I've got like one of each shock, but I have two Temple Gardens, three Windswept Teeth, and three Wooded Foothills, but everything else is one of in the deck. And I actually think it's correct. The games I've lost, like the majority of games that I've lost, have been to exactly Blood Moon, which makes sense with my five color deck. But it's been interesting. I don't know. I'm probably gonna take it out for another spin sometime soon. I've been trying to recoup my tickets because, you know, this has been an exercise in loss and humility, so I'm trying to rip my tickets, but I will take this for another spin.
You know, you're really not selling it as well as you think you are.
Well, I mean, like, the last time I played the deck, I went 3-2, just trying to get through some of the more difficult matchups, because, you know, this, it does get picked apart by things like fire, and that's actually how I lost. I got fired, and they killed my Birds of Paradise and my Bloom Tender, and I was like, well, that's unfortunate. So, once again, still needs some work, but a fun deck regardless. Anyways, we should probably go back to talking about, you know, actual metagame contenders. Are there any other lists from Modern that have been, I don't know, surprising you, that have been popping up more than people should be aware of?
I don't really think so. I mean, Murktide Regent kind of tore it up at the SCG this weekend, but it's not like, you know, that's it's not exactly new and exciting, right? We're all very used to Murktide Regent kind of having strong finishes. I still don't think the deck is as good as a lot of people think it is. I think it's just very overrepresented. It feels like, you know, kind of a classic Jundish style deck. I think if you look at the overall win rates of the deck, it's still not very good, despite putting up strong finishes. So, I don't know. There's a lot of it. You should always have a plan for it, but, like, I personally don't think you should play it, although many people will tell me I'm wrong.
I think you're wrong, but I get it. I definitely do.
I'm not impressed by that deck, though. Like, I don't know. When I play with it, it feels like crap. When I play against it, I'm generally unimpressed. I would love to know what my overall win percentage against that deck is. I know it is very positive, but, like, even with decks that I'm supposed to be weak against it with, I think it is still positive. It's, like, you know, some of that could just be, like, differences in player skills, right? But I'm just, I don't know.
I think it's like Jund, where it's just, you know, classic Jund. For those who don't remember this, there was a point where Jund was a popular deck in Modern, but it was like 45% against the field, right? Like, you didn't dominate any matchup, but you had decent game versus everything, and you could outplay people, you could get into interesting spots where you knew the matchup better than they did. I think this is that kind of deck, where you have a lot of tools. I mean, having Lightning Bolt, Unholy Heat, and Counterspell with Expressive Iteration, I think does put you at a a decent edge. You know, not including things like Raghavan and whatnot. Like, you just have a lot of ability to navigate a game and shape it into a position where you can win it, regardless of kind of what the initial configuration of it is. Very good at sideboarding. You have a lot of really tight answers in blue-red right now. I think that's kind of where the deck is successful. Like, there's not many better... I'm going to try to say this as politically as possible. There aren't many better decks that can play Blood Moon effectively that have good utilization of Graveyard Hate, that can actually play dressed out and it not be a huge issue for you, that actually are allowed to have access to Raghavan and Expressive Iteration in this format. Like, you just get a lot of stuff that people don't get. And you end up having kind of a lot of, like, really, I don't say safe answers, but, like, you know, not worrying about Blood Moon, not worrying about taking shock damage from your duels, because you actually don't mind having two basics in play. Like, there's a lot of, like, really, I don't say cute things, but things that end up being pretty good in the modern format, just coincidentally, that kind of happen in this deck.
Yeah, not impressed.
Well, yeah, I tried to tell him.
You know what deck I am impressed by, though?
What?
Bring the Light. It had two copies in the top 16 of the 20K, and very few copies in the 20K overall. Looking through the win percentages, it was one of the best performing decks in there. I will say, okay, one of the pilots that did very well was Andrew Voro, and he is, like, Scapeshift is, you know, his love. He plays other decks, but he plays that deck a lot, and so he's going to artificially, you know, inflate that win rate some. But I don't know. Called it before I left, and it continued to tore it up. I think if I had a serious event tomorrow, it would be one of my very strong contenders for what I would play.
Yeah, I mean, it just does a lot of really solid things. I think having a deck that actually gets to utilize Leyline Binding, I've seen it on a couple lists, but, you know, having it actually be a reliable thing to play and not even having to go through the trouble of getting the Trilands, which isn't really even a burden for this deck. Like, I think there's a lot of situations where, like, you do not mind just getting that, like, Roggen Triome or, like, Savai Triome on one, and then eventually just playing, like, Ren and Six on two off of a breeding pool. That took me a second. But, like, that just seems like a line that you're like, oh, there's no way this works. And, like, suddenly you just have all five colors. You're playing your Ren and Six on three, or on two, rather. And then on three, you can actually play the Leyline Binding for one mana effectively. There are still a lot of nice things here. That's the other thing I want to mention. The fact you actually get to play Omnath, right? Like, this is one of the few Omnath decks left. And once again, I think Urien leaving kind of did a number on the Omnath representation in the format, but, like, the card's still really messed up. Like, that has not changed. This is a really solid deck if you're interested in that card. Also, too, like, the playing Bring to Light with the Tybalt Cosmic Imposter, like, I still love that little combo.
Yeah, I go back and forth. Sometimes I'm like, how good is 5-mana Planeswalker? And then I play with it. I'm like, oh, it's this good. And then other people, like, I don't know, like, I'm not playing it for a bit, and I forget about it, and I see somebody get it in the wrong spot a time or two, and I'm like, yeah, that's not good. And then, you know, I play with it again. I'm like, oh, no, broken.
Yeah, it's very good. I actually did get to... What's the stupid card called? I got to cast Bring to Light. I got Tybalt. And then I minused the... minused targeting a... What's that silly card? Amulet of Vigor. Do you know that one? Amulet of Vigor?
You know, I have heard of it.
Okay, yeah. So I got to minus that. And then I got to play my own... I really plussed it later. So my opponent ended up having a... What is that silly card called? Lotus Field. So I got the plus, and then I got to come into play on tap because I had a... with a whatever it's called. So I was very excited. Getting an Amulet of Vigor that I got to untap a Lotus Field. It was all off miles from me.
You know what a very easy way to consistently have Amulet of Vigor is?
To play Amulet.
Yeah, you put it in your deck. Maybe play some Urza Sagas. You know.
That's awful. Oh, man. Oh, by the way, have you seen this list? I'm sure you have, but it's like playing Amulet Vigor, playing Lotus Field. It's just like dumping a bunch of artifacts into play and untapping them and...
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but it looks sweet. So you're talking about, for the listeners at home, we're talking about the Aspiring Spike Brew. He's going off with Amulet with, what is it called? Not Jeweled Lotus. Timeless Lotus. Mm-hmm. The 5 mana that taps for one of every color. That deck looks nutty. I definitely want to play it. I've watched him play it some on stream, and it actually looks pretty good. And, you know, I don't think it's like, oh, this is just like the new better Amulet, but it does some things different. It seems much weaker against the card Force of Vigor. Not that Amulet is, like, ever happy to see that card across the table.
Sure.
But the Spike deck looks much, much weaker to it. But overall, seems pretty solid. I've seen him get a number of, like, turn 3 kills with it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it, and that actually makes a lot of sense, too, because I was playing, I guess this was, like, last weekend or 2 weekends ago, but I literally was just playing, and I was like, oh, cool, this is an interesting deck. And then I played another league, and it showed up again. I was like, oh, it's kind of crazy. And then I played, like, the next match, and it showed up again. I was like, okay, so whose deck is this? Who do I blame here? Is it Spike? Is it Doomwake? Who is it? So it does make sense. Yeah, the deck... and there is, I can post this too. I've seen a couple different versions of it, but the one Spike has on his Twitter that I'll actually post, he's playing like Mycosynth Gardens to copy Lotus Field and things like that too. You're playing Azusa, you're playing Timeless Lotus, you're playing Golos. I mean, you really just do just dump a bunch of things onto the battlefield. I got killed by Emrakul the Aeon's Torn multiple times, just hard cast from hand. Like, it was nutty. It was cool. I'm still upset. I'm crying on the inside, but it was a really, really neat deck. Just seeing how many times, like, the... I said this. Mycosynth Gardens was targeting Amulet of Vigor to untap the bounce lands multiple times and Cascading Cataracts multiple times and Timeless Lotus multiple times. So it was very, very easy just to, like, make multiple mana between Azusa and Escape to the Wilds and things like that. Yeah, the deck is very, very sweet if you have not seen it. Truly devastating. Have you gotten to play any Legacy?
No.
No? Okay.
So I've had time, and I just haven't done it yet because I'm a bad Legacy podcaster. I haven't played that much Magic since being back from San Diego. I've talked about this on the show. Last year, I let my Magic life balance, get very bad. So I've cut back my Moto playing significantly. And all of my Moto playing since I've been back has been Pioneer, which sounds weird because it is definitely not my favorite format.
Sure.
And I actually don't think I need to be prepping for Dallas quite yet. Mm. But I've been really curious about these Atraxa decks people are talking about. So that's where my focus has been. That being said, you know, I've been, like, actively, like, devouring lists and, like, thinking about what I want to play and, like, you know, just kind of absorbing Legacy content. And I am definitely excited to fire up some Legacy whenever I'm done with my current league.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll be awesome. I mean, like, I think I could be wrong, too. And so let me know if you think I'm off base here.
Oh, you're wrong. Yeah,
yeah, okay, definitely. Well, good start. I just feel like the Delver decks have not bounced back yet, and there's just been, like, a lot of just stuff. And it's stuff that I'm like, I would never have seen this 3 months ago. But here we are. I guess, want to give a shout-out to Rich Callie, because, one, Rich is good people. But also, Rich is, you know, top-8ed Legacy Challenge this weekend, playing, you know, Teamer Delver, which I think is the best iteration of Delver right now. I think if you're interested in trying to start off with the deck, you know, where do I start with this? I think playing Tarmogoyf in the main deck is a good place to start the clock, but also being able to have access to things like Minsk and Boo out of the sideboard is huge. But, I mean, like, you are still just playing a Delver deck that's not nearly as powerful as the version with Expressive Iteration, which I know is not really saying much. That card was busted in Legacy especially, but I don't know, just not super impressed with a lot of things you can do with Delver right now, so I've been trying to jump around. But this is the version of Delver I would be playing right now for anyone interested. But, you know, without the, you know, the police holding down the format, we're seeing a lot of, like, really cool decks pop up. Like, the, I think Mr. Vivid ended up getting, you know, a top 8 with the, this, like, Mystic Forge combo deck, I guess is probably the best way to say it, but, like, you're just doing, like, a lot of, I don't want to use the word bizarre, unique things, with, like, Basalt Monolith and Mesmeric Orbs. You get to mill your deck, and you get to get Echo of Aeons in your graveyard, and you get to essentially just wheel. You've got a lot of free mana and, like, Voltaic Keys and stuff like that, so you can untap it and generate mana. You've got Karn, you've got Walking Ballista, so you can murder people like that, but you can also just, like, Karn and go get Aetherflux Reservoir, or you can go get Mycosynth Lattice if you just want to lock them out. Like, the deck is, like, real crazy, and I got to experience that one league. That was a delight. I'm very happy that happened. But, like, this is a really interesting deck that I don't think would have, once again, I don't think it was possible to see success in a field that's dominated by Delver.
Yeah, I mean, that was a deck people have played off and on for kind of a while, right? So
yeah.
We've seen it before. I do agree with what you're saying. Delver has not had its resurgence, which is kind of interesting to see. Like, I feel like it will come back, but who knows? Honestly, if it stays where it's at right now, where it's putting up occasional results, but it's not just, like, half the top 8, like, I think that's perfect.
It is, yeah. I just think that there's no other deck like it, like, for better or worse. I think Reanimator is having a, you know, obviously time of its life right now. I think it's one of the best 5 decks you could be picking, probably one of the best 3 decks you could be choosing. But, like,
big disagree.
Okay, but it's still one of the top decks, and I think it is a, there are other graveyard decks that you could be playing, right? Like, you could be playing Hogak. Please don't do that. you could be playing, you know, Dredge or something like that too. There are, and even like Cephalid Breakfast kind of toes into that graveyard category, you know, having a win condition that is essentially based off of graveyard interaction. But it does something unique that you'd want to play Reanimator, or you'd want to play Cephalid Breakfast, or you'd want to play Dredge if that's the life you want to lead. There's no deck like Delver. And I think it just is putting a, it is allowing other decks to kind of run wild, because there's nothing to fill that vacuum. And once again, I think, you know, once again, having a number of top 8s here and there, I think, is good. But I feel like there has to be another deck that, even if it's not playing Delver Secrets, is still playing a really strong Daze Force of Will game that, you know, can lock down the board. And I'm not sure what that deck is yet. I think it might be that blue-white list that we saw. I believe it was, this was a couple weeks ago. I played it this last week, but it doesn't particularly matter. But, like, the blue-white control list, I think that might be the deck, but, like, it is not nearly the same, not nearly as good. So, still kind of, I'm just interested in seeing where we kind of end up with the with that.
So, first, I would say Reanimator. I understand that you see it put up a lot of results, but when you also look at like the bottoms of the tables, it's there too. Right, like,
oh yeah, yeah.
And I feel like we talk about this all the time. Like, I feel like constantly people are like Reanimator, 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 but like, it's just not a particularly good deck. It's very good at beating up on Bruce. It's very good at beating up on like decks that aren't tuned. So I think whenever there's any kind of shakeup, you see Reanimator come out and they go nuts while people try to figure out what they're doing. I think a month from now, you're not going to see Reanimator putting up the kind of results it's putting up now. And it, even if you look at its win percentage now, I don't think it's anything special. I just, and this comes from somebody who has played Reanimator before. Like, I think Reanimator is great for playing in leagues. I think it's bad for playing in challenges. The end.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I also think you're not the only person I've heard be like, oh no, like we need a Delver deck. I just like don't think that's true. I think that's just something that people who like playing those strategies think is true. And this is coming from somebody who likes playing tempo decks too. In fact, why am I blanking on their name? Casey Lancaster, who goes by Kelly Rowland on Modo and Cole9 on Twitch. He has been playing like Rogues in Pioneer, and I'm so excited that I might be able to play like this tempo deck in that format. But like, I just don't think that like you need to have that deck. Like, I just don't really think it matters. I do think it's good if people do have a tempo deck they can play because that's what they enjoy. But like, honestly, talking about it keeping other things in check, like, I just don't think that's a real thing. I like the variety that we're seeing now. Like, people should be able to play a variety of decks. I just don't think it's good when it's like, oh, like, we need that Day's Force of Will check deck, that Day's Force of Will deck to keep them in line. Just don't think that's a real thing. Plus, Cephalid Breakfast is a Force of Will Day's deck, so that could be your police.
It's not a good deck for that, though. That's not really what it's trying to do there. I feel like whenever you cast Days or Force of Will out of Cephalid Breakfast, it just like puts you so far back from actually winning the game.
Honestly, I
disagree, but
I mean, one of us plays Cephalid Breakfast and wins, and one of us plays it and loses, so I'm gonna defer to myself here.
And also for anyone at home, it was Jujubeen who was playing that deck, the blue-white, so you can stop posting on Twitter, or maybe do, just do it anyways. You probably already sent it, it's fine. But one of the other decks that I think that actually is doing pretty well, being a Day's Force of Will deck, and it's actually a deck that our friend Brendan has been playing for a long time, so just shout out to him. This ended up making top 8 of a challenge this last weekend too, by Screenwriter New York. But it's Arclight Phoenix, which is a very sweet deck. It is a Force of Will Days deck. Like, it is. It just plays Force of Will, plays Days. It obviously, this version, if you haven't seen the Arclight Phoenix deck in Legacy, you're playing Dark Ritual, you're trying to get a Buried Alive in, and, you know, you can combine that with possibly a Ponder or something like that. You've got 3 spells, and you're going to get back your Arclight Phoenixes. And this deck is very resilient. It's able to put the creatures into the graveyard pretty effectively through something like the Buried Alive, but also just, you know, a Fateful Fluting, something like that. You can very easily just, like, put a bunch of power onto the board and make your opponent have to answer it over and over and over again. And you also get some interaction, right? You do get things like Thoughtseize. I've seen versions of this before with the Cabal Therapy. This version's not playing it, but, you know, it's an interesting deck. But this is something that, you know, looking at the success of this archetype, really the only person who plays it, besides our friend, is Screenwriter New York. And the last result with this was from January 15th, which is, you know, earlier than 3 months with no results. And suddenly we get another top eight, right? I just think this is another deck that is actually decent at playing that kind of counterspell game. So you're seeing some success with it. Now that is a hard thing to actually fill.
You know, I gotta say, I really want to love the Phoenix decks. Mm-hmm. And I cannot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not... I mean, okay, so this does make my Hogak heart beat a little bit harder, just because it does play a lot of cool cards. I like the strategy overall. I could be wrong, too. The Cabal Ritual seems really random to me. I don't know if you feel the same way.
No. So it does a couple things, right? So, like, having a proactive answer for, like, opposing surgical extractions is good, or opposing force of wills. Also, if you end up with your Phoenixes in your hand sometimes, an easy way to get them into your graveyard is by Cabal Therapying yourself. Like, this is going to sound weird after saying I can't love this deck. Like, I actually think the deck is very intelligently built. I think every card serves a purpose. Like, I think you can look at it and everything, it's like, yeah, that makes sense, that makes sense, that makes sense. I don't enjoy playing it. And that's not even me saying, like, oh, this deck is good, this deck is bad.
I agree with you. I think you're 100% correct. I'm saying Cabal Therapy probably should be in the deck, but they're playing Cabal Ritual in this deck.
Oh, I misheard you.
Yeah, no, I might have said it wrong. I think it should be Cabal Therapy, but it says Cabal Ritual. And looking back at other lists I've seen, I just keep seeing Cabal Ritual, which seems surprising. Because I do like the idea of being able to, like, flashback Arcanine Phoenix and having that be one of the spells and you just getting it back later in the turn. Like, that's really cool. But this is not doing that. So I'm kind of confused about why it's in there, but I could just be missing something.
So I do think having rituals just kind of makes sense. You're trying to resolve a 3-mana spell. I don't have the list in front of me right now, but it has Thoughtseize, right?
It does, yeah.
So being able to Cabal Ritual into Thoughtseize and Buried Alive makes a good amount of sense.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Phoenix, can I just say, I forgot about the Secret Lair printing for that card. And that art is awesome.
For Arcanine Phoenix?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if you've seen it. It was in the 30th edition.
Oh, God. Yeah, that is really nice.
It's so cool.
Yeah. Big fan. That's really cool.
You know, I definitely have not been putting rogue cards into my into my cart while we've been talking. But if I were, I would also point out, like, Kaido Shizuki, its showcase printing is also super cool, and I don't think I had seen it before.
That is a good one. I like that one.
I've never seen it. Like, I don't care for the borderless one, but that showcase one is... Mm.
Yeah, it's real choice. Okay, I know we need to go relatively soon. I want to talk about one more Legacy deck, though. And this is actually one that, you know, has been talked about a lot in our personal group chat, but I've seen it have really solid results, and this one actually ends up getting a result in another challenge this week from I Would Like to Respond. This is Jeskai Stoneblade, but, like, I think the thing that I think would more accurately describe this is kind of like a blue-white staff, and not like Progenitive Staff or something like that. It's the Staff of the Storyteller, which is a card that has been getting a lot of steam recently. It's a card, let me explain this one. Staff of the Storyteller, it's one generic and a white for an artifact. When it enters the battlefield, you create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying. Whenever you create one or more creature tokens, you put a story counter on Staff of the Storyteller, and you can pay a white, tap it, and remove a story counter from Staff of the Storyteller to draw a card. I've just seen this deck do a lot of work. This is a commander card. We've seen a lot of specifically artifacts from commander sets make a huge impact, and I think this has the potential to be another one of those cards.
Yeah, so I don't even know if it makes sense talking about it in terms of staff and specifically this deck, more so just like in the format. But yeah, people are getting very excited about it. I know that I am, you know, mine will be coming in the mail. They won't be here in time for FNM this week, but if they were, I would be trying Cephalid Breakfast with them. Because people have been saying that the card is kind of good by itself, but when you can add something like in Breakfast, you can play Urza Saga, so you can play Retrofitter Foundry. I've seen people pairing it with like Monastery Mentor. That sounds really good. Pairing it with Minskin Boo gets you a draw card every turn, because you can always make your additional Minsk, even if you're, or your additional Boo, rather, even if you're not going to use him. So there's like a lot that this card can do to give you an advantage, and just like the fact that it works into so many different decks is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those cards too where I keep looking at it and I'm like, I just feel like this shouldn't be that good, but you know, it's really good just incidentally, right? Like, you do get to like put things like Batter Skull or College Complete into play, you get to draw a card, that's nice. I kind of miss the fact that how good it is in multiples. Just having that second staff coming to play, making the token, and saying, well, this time I get to draw two cards. And then doing the third one, and, you know, I'll get one token, but I get to draw three cards. And then suddenly your Teferi bounces it back to your hand, that draws you another card, you replay it, you get another token, you get to draw three more cards off that, and like suddenly you're really just, like, humming there. Those kind of interactions I kind of missed initially looking at it, and now the more I've seen it in play, the more I kind of see how people are using it in general, you kind of do see the power of it once the engine gets going.
Yeah, I'm very excited to get some games in with this card.
All right, we should probably get out of here. I feel like there's a bunch of stuff we could still talk about, but I think we've had a long week. I mean, it's only Tuesday, I know, but I'm happy to have you back on too. I don't want to exhaust your pipes. I know flying back from San Diego, probably I don't know if you quite recovered from that trip yet.
I'm over things by the next day.
That's good. All right. Well, if people wanted to, sit down, have a conversation with you, talk to you about Magic cards, where could they reach you?
Okay. Well, that would be tough to do because I'm very antisocial, so I'll probably tell you to go away. but you can still direct, you know, any questions, comments, loving praise, or complaints about Billy, whatever, to @ExpeditionMap on Twitter. Where can people find you?
If you're interested in finding me, I am @BadLuckBandit on Twitter. If you're interested in finding the show, we are @Depth_podcast on Twitter. And once again, just thank you to all of our patrons. We love you all so much, and the continued support's amazing. If you want to support us on Patreon or give us a donation on PayPal, or honestly just, you know, tell a friend about our podcast, we would love that personally. We're basically everywhere. I'm not even sure when the next big event is. I know we have some stuff coming up in July, but I'll be around. I mean, I got like 2 more months of school, and then I'm free for the summer. So I'm looking forward to hopefully playing some more Magic with you and playing some more sweet games.
To answer your question, the next big event, at least for me, is the first weekend of June is going to be the RC, which is Pioneer, so, you know, doesn't stand out to a lot of our listeners. And then past that, July 15th is SCG Baltimore, which is going to be Modern. Then past that, the weekend after that, our LGS AU is holding a Legacy 1K. And then the 29th, hopefully I will be in Barcelona for the Pro Tour. And if not, then maybe I will finally get to experience a Buffalo Chicken Dip Legacy event.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I am planning on going to the BCDL. I've got to work that out, though. It's, once again, my daughter's birthday is in the summer. It's kind of hard to work everything in. But I think we'll probably... I want to do that. I'm like 70%, we'll say. But I definitely want to go to Baltimore. I think modern, I've just been, you know, playing that, and it's definitely my preferred format right now between modern and legacy, which I think is like the first time in a while. Just, you know, losing Delver has hurt me. The scars have run deep, so really enjoying modern right now, though. I was having a good time exploring that format again.
It flips for me about every 3 months.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. All right. Well, with that, I guess I will see you next week.
See you next week.
All right.